a member of the Talk and Audio Network. Find more at talkandaudio.com or search for us on iTunes. Now, let's crack open another one. This is Talkin' Sports.
So you were not watching Monday Night Raw when Lonzo and LeVar Ball showed? You don't have cable. I don't know what I'm asking.
Well, this is it. And nor do I watch that crap. Not since I was maybe 11.
That's bullshit. But
it's not bullshit at all.
I know you were an Attitude Era guy. Little Stone Cold, Little Rock.
Yeah, okay, well, I would catch a little of it as I cruised by. But
yeah. Don't be ashamed. It was big at the time. Lots
it wasn't
watching.
Must-see TV like it is for you.
It was at the time, yeah. I wouldn't
wearing
miss
your,
an episode.
Wearing your sleeveless T-shirts.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
I do enjoy a sleeveless T-shirt in the summer.
I know. Your hairy delts, awesome.
That's it. Would you see the hairy delts in concert?
I think he was one of the guys in One Direction, wasn't he?
Hairy delts. There was a commentator or a guest on CNN this afternoon. His name was Harry Bacon, and I was enjoying that.
Of course.
I wish I was more mature of a man. Like, that's just funny.
Like Harry Cox.
I don't know. Harry Bacon was. I was going to say rubbing me the right way, but.
Harry Bacon. It's a little sweaty and oily. Hair halfway up the shaft.
Oh, dear. Hey, while we're sort of on the... I only brought it up, Lonzo and LeVar Ball appearing on Monday Night Raw. What a train wreck.
Terrible.
That was enough to get me to flip over when I saw on Twitter.
Well, how much money do you think they paid him?
I bet you not much. They were in L.A. at the Staples Center, and he's just been drafted there, so I'm sure it was a...
Man, what a gong show.
I've been meaning to bring this up for a show or two. Confirmed, it's happening August 26th. Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather.
Okay, people. So what he's really hoping here and angling for is for me to say,
all I was going to ask.
I never saw. I said it would never happen.
You did.
And I did say that.
I was really, though, just going to ask for your take.
Well, to me, unless there's shenanigans.
It's a train wreck.
It's a train wreck, and it'll be over soon, right?
I don't think it'll be over quick. I think Floyd wins, but I don't know that Floyd, for the last several fights, far as I can tell, and certainly that one that everyone saw against Pacquiao.
Defensive fighter.
That's all he's going to do. And he can toy with Conor a little here, I think, right? I assume. But most of what I'm reading seems to suggest that this won't be a he probably won't knock Conor out. It'll go the distance, but he'll...
Boring as shit.
I mean, could be.
Yeah.
In that freak show nature, I'm intrigued by it.
Right. See, to me, the thing is, and anybody who thinks that Conor has a chance...
Conor has no chance.
Like, to me, Conor is a good MMA striker. Right? But the amount of real estate, he has to make it up to a... one of the greatest boxers of all times is that there's way too much real estate to make up there.
So I was watching an interview on Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan, and he had a guy who from Yahoo who covers, and I forget his name now. This is a couple of weeks ago. He covers all combat sports. He covers Floyd. He covers boxing. Covers MMA. He says with the amount of time and the amount of skill that he has within MMA. Conor is probably capable of getting to be a number four or five contender in his weight class as a boxer. He said he's a very good striker, but you're not fighting another four or five. You're going to fight one of, as you've said, the best ever. And he's not going to touch him. Like Floyd will just walk through this. This was a paycheck for Floyd, right? And there's some people who are saying that this was a cheap way for Floyd. I wasn't aware. He's at 49 wins, and he retired. So to get to 50, instead of fighting a real contender who maybe has a shot, he's going to kind of go through this and it'll be sanctioned and 50, it shouldn't count
50
as 50
and 0.
Right. I don't know if it's 0.
Yeah, undefeated. Yeah? Never. Okay. He's never lost.
Okay. I don't know, man. I think I'm more interested in this than you, clearly, but.
See, to me, the thing is, you're going to watch that first.
There was just too much smoke for there not to be fire. That just had been talked about for so long.
To me, the thing was, there was nothing in it unless there was going to be a colossal payday.
Which, well, I assume that's what's happened.
Well, of course. Yeah. If they're talking about 100 for Connor and 100 plus for Mayweather,
yeah,
that is astronomical cash, right? And so to me, I never thought they could ever get that money and and recoup it.
Right. Well, now that'll be the thing. I saw a bunch of people said when Floyd did finally fight Pacquiao, it was as busy as anyone had ever seen Vegas, right? And not just like people just wanted to be in the city, right? Forget having tickets, forget having. And I don't believe, I believe this is being presented by the MGM hotel, but it's not at their arena. They're going to move it to the T-Mobile arena, right? The big one they've just opened up for the hockey team.
Yeah, for the Golden Knights.
Yeah. But they're expecting that they don't, or I guess the prediction is they don't know that this will outdraw Floyd versus Mayweather. The thought was, Floyd is Mayweather, Floyd versus Pacquiao.
Yep.
The hope is, you get that huge classic boxing audience and you get the MMA audience, but there's a lot of people on both sides of it that think this is a joke and that maybe we just wouldn't bother, right? Like, but it's going to be one of the biggest fights of all time. Like, it will, but whether it'll break that kind of record, I have no idea.
Well, I think it's Joe Gonzaga. The Welsh Dragon. Anyways, he went 47-0 as a super middleweight, sort of. He was just coming through here for their ringside for whatever. It's a huge money raiser, anyways. Yeah. And they've had Hagler, they've had Shivalo. They always have big names come through here.
Okay.
Tommy Hearns has been here.
Right.
Holyfield's been through. Joe Gonzaga, I think, is a Gonzaghi. Anyways, he was just through here, and they said, and he was talking about just some of those things that we've just touched on, right? About what an elite-level boxer Floyd is.
Mm-hmm.
And now, he never said it would be a joke, but he said, yeah, it's not going to be close, and it's not going to be entertaining, but they're likely going to get my $90.
Well, and that's where I'm at. I'm going to watch it. I'll be intrigued by it. Whether or not I try and find a group of people interested in whatever, whether or not I go to a bar, whether or not I buy it here at the house, I don't know, but I'm going to watch it.
Okay. Well, I don't anticipate it being entertaining. I think the lead up to it and the hype will be the most scintillating part of it.
Well, if there's anything that both the boxing world and the MMA world are good at, it's hyping.
For sure.
They will hype it. It will become and they said that the pre-sales, if you want to call it that, on Floyd versus Pacquiao were only okay. But it over those last week or two, in terms of buying it on pay-per-view, right? It was a lot of last minute people that just went, fuck, I can't miss this.
Once you start seeing the road to and all those sorts of. And
they said those last minute buys are what put it over the top. It was all those people that just went, fuck, everyone's going to talk about this at work on Monday. I got to see it, right?
But what is it going to come down to, right? How many sales do you have to make at $100 a pop, right? To make up just the salaries?
Yeah. Well, because, the UFC fights are typically more like $50, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyways, insane. And so
we hadn't brought it up yet, and it was something we had talked about in the past. So I'm intrigued by it, but I don't expect any surprises, right? I think Floyd kind of walks through this, but we'll see.
Certainly we will.
I wanted to ask you, we're going to get into some more hockey stuff here. We got a few things to touch on. There was some talk before the Travis Hamonic deal, and we did mention it on the last show, that the Leafs offered.
Look, you can help me out then, perhaps. Go ahead.
That the Leafs had offered, the centerpiece of the package they were offering for Hamonic was JVR. And the Islanders preferred to send him to the Flames for a first and 2 seconds.
Yeah.
They had apparently been looking for 2 firsts, and no one was prepared to go there, I guess. I wonder, it came right down to it at the end of the season that the Islanders were battling there with the Leafs for that last spot. So there is some talk that they might have preferred to send Hamonic out west, which would make sense. But then maybe they just weren't that interested in JVR in his 1 year.
Well, to me, it seems like they don't want, with taking on of Eberle, they don't want They don't want the salary.
Right. Well, that could be. And
why would you not take a 50-point guy back?
And I think, yeah, well, he's only got 1 year left, would be one. But if all of a sudden, if you're putting Tavares, JVR, and Eberle out together. It's
28 years old.
Yep.
Like, to me, it's not. I don't get what the Islanders are doing there. You want to sign Tavares. You think bringing Eberle in is going to be that thing. But then you're trading away your one of your top three defensemen.
Right. Yeah, it's a little odd there. So my question to you
and
would
bringing nothing back.
If you were Toronto, would you continue to use JVR as something to dangle? Because he's a useful guy. He does some things that not everybody can do. 50 to 60 point guy with some size. He's not a huge crash and bang guy, but he has no problem going to the front of the net.
Yeah.
Would you use him or look to deal him and get something now, especially a defenseman? Or would you, if you're Toronto, take the approach that Washington just did with Oshie and let him go through the season and then see where you're at? Because the Leafs are not, I don't think anyone obviously believes that the Leafs are where Washington was this season in terms of pushing for a cup.
No. I get what you're saying, though, right? In
are
terms
you better
of,
off to just, and then the asset that you get back if you lose him is the cap space.
Well, I think the Leafs have a luxury. They're in a bit of a nice spot, right? With the rookies that came on with the Marner,
yep.
Nylander, Matthews.
Yeah.
Who can forget Connor Brown?
Everybody loves downtown Connor Brown.
And then you throw in Bozak and Kadri, right? And to me, it's one of those three older guys, older in brackets, that you are looking at. And clearly, I think Van Riemsdyk is the oldest, right, of that group.
Yeah, he and Bozak could be very similar. I don't think Kadri's going anywhere. It'll be one of those two that goes.
So to me, if you can shore up the D, like if they could have obviously swung that deal.
Yeah.
Awesome. If they were in on the Mathot thing.
Right.
Whatever.
Apparently he wouldn't. I guess he's got that Canadian trade thing.
So outside of Ottawa, he would have come back.
Right, yeah. And we'll get to that. I want to ask you about that too.
Yeah. But to me, I would for sure. If you could trade that, what is looking like a glut of forwards.
Yeah.
Right? Because you still need to mix in some other guys, right? So you want to keep those studs, if that's what they are.
Yeah.
But you want to keep those little show ponies happy up front.
Well, and that becomes the thing. If you trade JVR and do nothing else, for a defenseman, I mean.
Yep.
Your top scoring left winger last year has 5 even strength goals. You're looking at Matt Martin, you're looking at Leo Komarov, and looking at Zach
I'm looking
Hyman.
Right at you, Matt Martin.
So.
Yeah, you know. Okay. And I don't know. To me, I haven't looked at the Leaf lineup that closely. But to me, you are looking at it. To me, that's a no-brainer, right? If you could lure a now, clearly, a middle-of-the-road forward.
Yeah.
I think at 50 points, I don't want to devalue James Van Riemsdyk. I'm just saying, to me.
Yeah.
He's not
irreplaceable.
That's right. Whereas if you're looking to parlay him into a second or third defenseman,
yeah,
they're harder to come by than JVRs are up front.
Yeah, and I wonder. You know, I was just reading here just before we turned on the mics about what Patrick Marleau might do, and as an aging guy, still put up 27 goals this year. Would you sign him to a 2-year deal worth 5 apiece or whatever it's going
to
be?
Because what you hope to do with
JVR
that is
JVR brings you the defenseman and you're off and going, hopefully, right?
Is you hope to do with Marleau, you bring Marleau in and hope that he can do what Dion did in Ottawa. Sometimes his value wasn't so much what he was doing in the ice, but being a steady vet who's been through a bunch of stuff, faced some adverse situations, which clearly Patrick Marleau has as well in San Jose.
Yeah.
So, if you could flip Marleau for a defenseman.
JVR for a defenseman.
JVR, and then, yeah.
But that's it. To me, I'm not looking to unload him. I think I would, unless you find another fit like that, I'm going to keep him, and I'm not going to worry at the deadline. I'm not going to worry, oh, my God, he might leave. You got a shot to at least be pretty good this year. Take it. Keep him.
One in a million.
Deal with it at the end of the season, and if he leaves, you get $4.25 million in cap space, and if then, you know, you can talk. You probably won't give him 8 years like Washington did with Oshie because that was fucking awful.
Yeah.
But
good for TJ.
He's just not a – yeah, for sure. I'm not looking to push him out the door, right? I'd happily keep him through the year unless he brings me exactly what I need.
Well, because the most interesting thing that's going to happen here in Toronto this year is to see what happens when you had all those guys with career years up front.
And yeah, yeah. And you know, we got off like scot-free with injuries. That won't happen again. So someone's going
to
down.
To see how this parlays into a sophomore.
Someone's going down.
Yeah, well, this is it, right? And so to me, you go, that's going to be that, because otherwise, if Toronto continues on that arc, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But I'll be interested. And I don't know. I certainly am not going to stand here and piss on Toronto, because to me, they're heading in the right direction for the first time in
50
decades.
Years.
So yeah, to me, that'll be interesting to watch. Fascinating.
And Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts posted on Tuesday on sportsnet.ca. He suggested, and this is interesting to me, you mentioned Dion here a few minutes ago, and it seems like the well may have been poisoned there a little bit to the fact that him not waiving his no trade for the expansion draft cost them Mark Methot, and now everybody's mad and they may have to trade Dion, and then really what the fuck's left?
Well, apparently, apparently they've asked him again if he would go to one of the teams on his 10 no deal.
He's got to be sitting like, what the fuck?
What is it? And he said no, yeah, right?
So of course he did.
Okay, I know, but at this point you're like, you've asked me now. It's like, hey, can we expose you? You'll never get picked up. No thanks. So hey, can we trade you to this team that's on your no trade? No!
But I'm feeling a little unloved.
this is exactly right. So the
thought that Friedman put down, and I know initially you're going to balk at this, and you probably should, but Dion to L.A., which is a team that he doesn't have to waive for.
Yep, which is key at this point.
For Dustin Brown.
Oof,
no. Who might have... Well, here's the thing. Their cap hits, identical... But Brown has less money left to be paid out, which you know Melnick would love.
Yeah, God damn it. No, because to me, yeah, Dustin Brown is useless.
He's not useless, but he's just not nearly.
No, we don't need a fourth line guy, which is where he's going to play, right? Dion can still play top four for the next year.
Yep.
Year at and least, a half.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's full value for the 4 years, but Dion's got way more value right now than Dustin Brown does. I'm not taking that at all.
Friedman also speculated that Ottawa may be on Dustin's note. Like, he may have to waive to go there.
Yeah, right on, Dustin. Thanks, buddy.
It was an interesting one, right?
We're all giving you the wicked thumbs up.
The cap dollars fit and different.
And I think Dion, having lived through the shit show that was Toronto,
yep.
I think at this point, Dorian goes back to him and says, hey, you know what? I'm a man, you're a man. We were looking to bring Methot back. We do. He's not coming back. You're our guy. And I think Dion's like, okay. I don't think.
I wonder if all the fans though are gonna be quite that reasonable.
Well, and honestly, have you seen anything go more sideways more quickly than the love fest that was here in Ottawa? With we love every player.
Yeah.
Every player, we love them.
Yeah.
And then now you're like, hey, that fucking guy, and then. Yeah, and it just sort of sours everything quickly. But
I've read a few places that people think that Dorian has bungled this pretty badly, this whole thing. Right?
Well,
that,
I think as soon as in this day and age where so much shit gets leaked, and clearly it's all going straight through Pierre LeBrun. So to me, I'm figuring out where that source is, right? Like what's happening there?
Yeah. Got our little Pierre's club.
Yeah, like somebody, so wherever that contact is, to me, yeah, I'm not sure what you can do, right? And if you look at now Methot getting selected and then getting flipped for a second round pick in 2020.
And a sixth round goalie draft.
Who Vegas had 11 cracks at.
Yes. Passed.
And passed on all 11 times, right? So that's what
Dylan
they're going.
Dylan Ferguson and a second.
No, I heard.
Hey, Dylan Ferguson, though, to his credit, thumbs up, ends his Vegas Golden Knight career having never allowed a goal. That's not every goalie.
Awesome for an expansion team. Now, to me, I heard an interesting thing, like when somebody, because the asking price here was a 2018 first.
Yes.
Which is, we know that's going to be a better draft. We don't know. Ottawa could be in the playoffs again, or they could be
sure
a lottery pick.
Sure. You know what I mean? Bottom 10, top 10. Who
knows? So, well, I'm thinking likely a
middle 10.
Yeah, middle 10 somewhere.
Yeah.
But just, you know, we just made the playoffs, man. We were 4 points up on the Islanders, whatever right. that was.
Yeah.
So
a week and a half left, there was still a chance you guys were the ones that were going to be out.
Right. At one point. So all I'm saying is, yeah, you don't give up that 2018 first. And so clearly there's a different price for Ottawa than there was once McPhee turns around and says, you know, okay,
yeah.
I'm going to flip him somewhere else. And the reality is McPhee, if he wants to have any continual credibility, can't say to Dorion, okay, I want a 2018
That's
first.
Right.
And then when the whole thing goes out and nothing happens, he can't go back to him and say, all right, I'll take a second and a...
Because you can never negotiate with that guy again.
Well, this is it. Then you go, yeah. I'm just going to outwait that guy.
Yeah. Right? No, and that's right. And there's no GM in the league who's, in years and years and years, who's had as much leverage as George McPhee did last week going into that. And every day that's gone by since then, he loses some, right?
Right.
But at the time, he had every franchise by the balls.
Hey, and did they select a better defenseman than Mark Methot?
Depends what you think of Nate Schmidt, I guess, but that would,
okay.
that's probably the only guy.
All right, yeah. Yep, and that's a good call.
Yeah, that's probably the only one.
That's
in the
a different player.
Yep,
much less experience.
Sure,
but when you look at Emelin or Spezza,
both of whom they're trying to unload and can't.
And if you're only getting a second for Mark Methot, what are you getting for Spezza and Emelin?
Yeah, you're keeping them. I think you're stuck with.
Okay, well, Emelin is 4.5.
No one wants,
and he sucks.
He does suck. He's terrible, man.
I heard you on the radio somebody say. Maybe Emlyn's going to be their KHL scout.
Well, I was reading again on Twitter. Someone went, man, you selected Alexi Emelin, who no one wanted, and now you're trying to trade him for a prospect like, oh, I don't know, Charles Houdon, who you passed on at the... You yeah. could have just taken him, right? Like,
yeah.
So there must have been some kind of quiet side deal there, too. I don't know.
Incentive to take.
Fuck. What a terrible pick.
Hand jobs.
I believe that...
Tie hookers.
I believe they'll get rid of Spezza, but...
Spezza.
But I think they're stuck with fucking Emelin.
Okay, but all I'm saying is you're now flipping those guys for later round picks.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine you're doing better.
Right. No, it was, you know, you got yourself another second round, but they got something like 20 picks over the next two years.
And they've pushed it out quite nicely. They have in terms of...
Yeah, like I don't really like the team they've drafted in terms of being competitive next year, but I like it in terms
it's getting worse.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I do like in terms of it's, as you said, long term, how many picks they're going to have and the way they're going to be able to develop, which is the only way you can do it. So that's an interesting one.
To do it properly.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on this year's Hall of Fame class?
My initial reaction was... That's a soft class.
Soft class. That's my initial as well, yeah.
So you and I have clashed on Mark Recchi.
Yep.
In the past.
Yep.
But let's deal with the two top guys. The two to me, which are linked forever together in Solani and Korea.
How come they're not bringing their boy Steve Ruchin with them?
Yeah, well, this is it. The Western Mustang, Steve Ruchin.
Come on. It's your center, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you don't. And I thought, oh, you know what? To me, and I heard today or I read somewhere where they talked about you should have to be qualified off of the era you've played in. Right? When you look at the gaudy stats that came out of that 20-year period, which is very late 70s through to the mid-90s.
Yeah, till New Jersey started doing their thing in like 94.
Right. You know, to me, that you almost have to qualify those years.
Right.
Right? Because that shit doesn't happen anymore. Right? And so guys coming out of those periods, it's really hard to say. Now, that being said... Solani comes in sort of at the beginning of that, sort of near the end of that late 80s, early 90s.
I hate that they call it the dead puck era. It had nothing to do with the fucking puck. It's
right,
the fact that you can left.
It's the equivalent, right, of the baseball where they loosen the...
That's right.
And you go,
the twine or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. It's not wound as tightly and you go, okay, that's
dead puck.
Ball. Dead puck because it's
dead
a strike.
Puck just means Bobby Holik is allowed to fucking ride you down
and make $9 million.
That's your dead puck.
Thank you, Rangers. Glenn Sather.
Yeah.
But when you look at Solani's stats, and it's man, when you score 76 goals or whatever it was,
pretty good
in his rookie season.
Yeah,
you're like, that's yeah. crazy, right? When you look at man, he had six seasons, even beyond that, six seasons of 48 goals or better.
And this is Solani.
This is Solani yeah. still. Yeah. yeah.
No, he's not a guy I really have any beef with going, because he also got his cup, which for a lot of people, I think less and less, but it does still seem to matter, right? Like,
okay, 1,451 games,
yeah,
684 goals, 1,459 points.
A point a game almost exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to me, you play 1,400 games and you score 1,400 points and you've won a cup,
yeah.
and one of those years you score almost 80 goals. You're my good. Man. You be in. A Hall of Famer.
You're in, yeah.
And so to me, yeah, it's surprising because he played so many of those years at the end, like 10 where he's between 30 and 45 points, and you're like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. So once you get into those other years.
Well, we're going to touch on that again, I think.
And here, so to me, Korea is.
No cup.
No cup, but career shortened.
Yep.
Right?
Like, thanks a lot, Gary Suter.
Bruh, this is it. So to me, that guy, he played, and I can't remember exactly, I want to say 989 games played.
Right.
989 points.
Yeah.
So again, under 1,000 games played, shortened due to injuries, concussions. Yeah, thank you, Scott Stevens, too, man.
Yes. Remember? Fuck, guy's just caving in, pottering his head every night.
Well, and honestly, such a small guy, right?
Yeah. But was there was a year or two, maybe more than that, where there was no one more exciting. Like coming down that left wing, hammering it far side, just flying. And especially when they're playing together, like him and Solani, and poor little Steve Ruchin just trying to keep up. But man, for a time, like there's a certain eye test to it too, I think.
Between 95 and 2000 is the period you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
He had four seasons of over 85 points, two over 100.
Like, right. Fuck, just so fast.
Hey, and that is, if you notice the dates, that is the second half of the 90s.
That
is your dead puck era that you've just referenced.
Yeah.
I think he for sure.
Well, it was 98 where Gary Suter caved his head in. So he came back again and still from that.
Right.
That caused him to miss the 98 Olympics, but he came back.
And to me, you've touched on something super interesting, right? Which is the eye test, right? Don't just look at guys' stats. You have to look at them in the era they played and look at the way they played. Interesting name that came up today, Pierre Turgeon. Not a Hall of Famer. Anybody who watched him through the 80s,
right.
Man, I think the reference was soft as church music. Like just to me, but the era he plays in.
But when I think Paul Kariya, I think Pavel Bure, right? Like very... just flying, all kinds of skill, doing it at a pace no one's ever done it at before. And, I mean, Bure got in, and that's fine, too. Very short career.
Yeah. Super cerebral, too, Paul Kariya.
Again, no cup for either of those two guys that were now Bure and Kariya.
Yeah.
So, for whatever, as I go forward, that's worth less and less to me.
Cups?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
When you're in a 30-team league, and you might have been...
More foreshadowing.
Right. Well, but I've already said in terms of Sundin, right? I sent you a text the other day that was just someone, Alfredsson will get in, but he just has to wait. And it was, Sundin didn't have to wait. Again, no cups for either of those guys.
See, and I'm a huge Alfie guy.
Sure.
But to me, he's not a Hall of Famer.
I'm not sold that Sundin is. I love it because he's got 120 more goals and 200 more points or whatever than Alfie. So
yep.
There's something there. But
more games played.
Yep.
And like I think it's 150 more points.
Okay.
But still, Sundin comes with the pedigree of being a first overall pick. Alfredsson's a sixth round pick. Came over 3 or 4 years sort of after being.
Well, and it's a major market versus smaller market. It's all these things.
Well, Quebec City is not a major market. Well,
okay, but that's not where Sundin made his name.
Okay, that's where he was first overall.
I understand.
But to me. Yeah, I think Alfie is one of those, like to me, if you want to look even at Swedes of his era,
right?
You have Sundin, you have Forsberg, you have Lidstrom.
Yeah.
Those are your, if you want to go even go further back in terms of Swedes, you want to go with Boreas Salming being a stud.
A trailblazer.
Right.
Too.
Those are your upper echelon. And then you have your Alfredsons, your Sedins.
Yeah.
Your Naslund, right, for a period of time.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marcus Naslund. Yeah. Yeah. Was
on that killer line with Brendan Morrison. And Todd Bertuzzi.
Hugely concussing line, not killer line. They don't, they frown upon that.
Whoops.
Yeah, but to me, Alfie is probably the best of that next tier.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm not sure he's a Hall of Famer, really, to me. He's a Senators guy, and I don't put any cachet.
Is Peter Forsberg a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, man, for me, sure, for sure he is.
Dominant, but again, very short, played on great. Those Colorado teams that he won with were great teams. That obviously he was a big part of that.
Well, he was a huge part of that, and I think he was a top.
And again, he's better. Let me just say this: he's better than Sundin, absolutely. But I wonder.
Okay, and you know
Lidstrom
what?
Lidstrom is a Hall of Famer, no brainer.
You talk to actual Swedes, and they don't love Forsberg because he plays a more robust style than
Canadian stuff.
This is it, yeah. Right? And so they preferred Naslund, they prefer Sundin.
Yeah.
Those were the Swedish guys, right? And so, to me, Forsberg is absolutely, he was dominant.
For sure. So let's carry on here with this class. What did you think before we get to the one that we're probably going to debate the most? Well, I don't think either one of us has anything against Daniel Goyette going in. I'm surprised it's taken Cassie Campbell this long.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, Daniel Goyette goes in.
I saw Daniel Goyette. I didn't see
Campbell
Cassie.
Is not in yet.
Okay, Cassie Campbell is not in.
Right.
I thought you were suggesting that she had got in.
No, I'm surprised she has to wait this long.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I think she was – she's way down the list, I think, of dominant women, though.
I don't know. I think part of it is maybe, to me, some of those intangibles. She was always the captain, right? She was a leader. She did – in terms of women's hockey, she did some of those things that were – talking about where do you factor them in. I think Cassie Campbell has to be a – but that's another – I don't think either of us right now have the stats to back any of that up.
No.
So Dave Anderchuk.
Nor does she.
Okay. Dave Anderchuk.
Yeah, not a Hall of Famer, man. No, I know it's hard to say that to but a guy who has 640 goals.
Right.
But again –
but I think he – and this is maybe how fine that line becomes. I think he's 0.8 points a game. Like instead of being 1 point a game, you're right around there, but you didn't quite get there, right?
Well, 1,639 games,
mm-hmm.
1,338 points.
That's probably 0.8, right? So,
yeah, okay, well, yeah, sure.
Well, that's just the stat I saw. I don't have the number.
Yeah, no, okay, well, sure. Let's go with that.
Played a long time, eventually got his cup in Tampa, but he was at that point no longer close to what he had been in some of his earlier
Buffalo stops
and even in
and
Toronto
playing with
a bit.
Doug Gilmore in Toronto.
Yeah.
But you know, he was never a top 10 player
in
the league.
That's right. I agree with that.
I think we're on the same page here.
Yeah. I think as we look at this, there's some stuff here in this whole class. I think if you wanted me to, if you give me a little time, I could make a pretty solid case that Kariya wasn't, right?
Well, because less than 1,000 games.
Right.
But to me, he was in that 5-year period that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And when he played...
Are we on Kariya again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Kariya played in that much shorter time frame...
He got into gets that Lindros, you know, well, for his just, five-year
just,
period?
Just wait. We'll come back because I have some stats. I have some stats here.
Okay. But kind of like it wasn't all that long, but while he was doing it, holy shit, right? Was he doing it?
Right. And so to me, yeah, Kariya was... There was no doubt. Nobody thought that Kariya wasn't a top five player in the league when he played.
Right. Yeah, right. Okay, yeah.
Smaller. Anderchuk, never.
I agree with that.
No,
he's one of those guys who played a long time, and we're going to...
So we're not debating him, let's just
we both got him out.
Let's just ditch him right away.
See you, Dave.
Okay, but before we get into Mark Recchi, Joe Nieuwendyk a Hall of Famer for you?
Cup in Calgary, Cup in Dallas...
Cup in New Jersey.
Cup in New Jersey. I don't know that he was the number one center on any of those teams, was he? Madonna would have been in Dallas.
Okay, but I'm asking you, is Joe Nieuwendyk a Hall of Famer in your opinion?
Yeah, I know you've got something over there to punch me in the face with, but I'm gonna say no.
Okay, well then I got nothing. I'm gonna.
Okay.
We'll just crumple that right up and throw it out the window.
Very good. Played a long time. guy you wanted on your team, but I
yeah.
Again, so, he started again, like some of his stuff was happening when I'm 6, 7 years old and whatever. But I don't think
his
so.
His back-to-back 50 goal seasons.
Yeah. So I don't think so. What I saw with him as a Leaf, no, not a Hall of Famer.
Right. And so the beauty is, and so to me now,
I thought it was going to go the other way. I was going to say no, and you're like, well, he had 4,000 points, so yeah, shut up.
No, no. See, because the thing is, he played 1,257 games, 564 goals, 562 assists, 1,100 points, right? 1,122 yeah. points, way less than a point a game. His yeah. first four seasons were awesome.
Yeah.
Right? So he has, you're talking about, I said, 1,120 points, three cups with three different teams.
Yeah.
Right, so to me,
and this is sounding familiar.
Yes, so this is what I'm saying is you look.
If
at
I
that,
had said yes to him and no to Recky,
this is it.
God, you're an idiot.
Well, this is it, right? And now clearly, I think had I just asked you that question, you would have given me the whole spiel. Yeah, but
no, he's one of those borderline guys for me. That's all. Which Recky is,
right.
So that's the one we're clearly getting to here. And I should say for the record, as I went preparing for this and looking at his numbers, I am less appalled by him getting in than I was a year ago when
discussed
it.
Eight seasons over 75 points, three over 100. One with Pittsburgh, two with the Flyers, right? So it's not
okay.
like he
again,
was
– Again, era. Those were before
okay.
his –
Okay, but you do look at the whole thing and go
– This is a very simplistic way of looking at it. The thing for me is – Forget the best player of his era. Was he ever the best player on his team? And I can't find a year where he was.
And we discussed that.
Yeah.
No, and I agree with that. And again, I don't think anybody ever would suggest that he was a top five player in the league either.
Right. And I think that's got to matter.
Or,
right?
You know, I think he may be a more direct comparable to Dave Andrechuk
yeah.
than he is to,
yeah.
to so, anything else. Right? Maybe not even a top 10 player.
But he was closer to a point a game than I thought he'd be. Now, a lot of those he racked up early on. Three cups matters. Again, not the best player on any of those teams. Never the best player in Philly as he was playing with that. Yeah,
1,652 games, over 1,500 points.
Right. So that was closer than I expected it to be when I went and looked at it. But when he was playing with Lemieux and Jágr and Francis, you know, not yeah. too heavy lifting. And that 06 cup. It was Eric Staal. It was Rod Brind'Amour. It was
I was going to ask if you could name the three teams he won a cup with.
So it's Carolina. It's Pittsburgh. He came back to Pittsburgh late, but I think he won in the 92 year.
He won in the 92 year.
And it would be... I think he got the Boston one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, it was the Carolina one. I have no memory of him playing in Carolina.
Yeah, that was a weird year because I went and they picked up Doug Weight. He came in late. Mark Recky came in there yeah. late. Like, it was a strange kind of...
20 games, yeah. 25 playoff games, but that's... Yeah.
Yeah. So, I do remember that, but that was a team led by a young Eric Staal and Eric Cole and Rod Brind'Amour.
And backstopped by a...
Cam Ward.
Cam Ward.
Yeah. What happened ever since? He's just...
Hey, man, he's got a cup.
And apparently was content with that because he hung him up, apparently.
Well, except not...
Yeah. No, I know he's still there.
Yeah,
he hasn't done shit.
I know.
So, I got to say, when I went and I did a little more research, I think I've softened on it, but only because of the other stuff that's getting let in, not because of what he did, right? If Dave Andrechuk's a Hall of Famer, then so's Mark Recky.
Yeah, and I think his value was probably most noticeable in that 2011 Boston win. I think so. Well, I don't think he led that team in
right.
any way, right?
Sure.
And I'm not here to suggest
no,
that,
no,
but
no.
I think that team was helped out greatly by his leadership and his experience.
I think he retired right after that one. I
yeah.
think that was the end.
Well, and honestly, with watching him at the end with those bucket on, hey man, if you have a hairline like that, shave it all down, yeah. man. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Ron Hextall phoned and said, man, that's horrible.
You're retreating.
Yeah. Not even retreating. You've left a little island in the top there, and it's like, oof, terrible, man. Terrible. Terrible. So I think he's a Hall of Famer, really, in terms of longevity and almost a point a game with that longevity.
Yeah.
Right, to me, plus three cups, and like the Neuwendijk situation, to me, I think when you're an ingredient, whether you're the biggest ingredient, but when you're an ingredient on three different teams, That says things, Claude Lemieux, right? I don't think anybody questions Claude Lemieux's value.
I have a hard time with that.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Claude Lemieux?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Okay, but he is a three-time cup winner with three different teams.
Okay, but what if
Mike's, Montreal, Colorado, New Jersey?
What if Mike Sillinger and his journeys just happened to be on three different cup teams?
Okay, but you remember when we did the Montreal, the Quebec team versus the rest of the Canada yeah. team, right?
I don't think Mark Recchi made either squad.
No, but Claude Lemieux made my
– Yeah.
He was on my fourth line.
Right.
400 goals.
Yeah.
Which I think surprised you, right, in terms of
– Yeah, I believe so.
Right, as a guy with, I think, 1,400 penalty minutes or whatever he had too, right? To me.
Oh, he was just a douche. On
he's
guys.
A wicked, wicked douche, right?
But you wanted that guy on
and,
your
and
team.
And that's all I'm saying is, yeah. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but I'm just saying
right.
he was an essential ingredient in those wins. Not a.
So for me, Mark Recchi, still not a Hall of Famer, but I'm far less
angry about
enraged
it than
I used to be, yeah. But again, I think that's more due to the standards of the Hall of Fame than
get out of here
than my own.
Yeah, you know, well, and I think
I just think standards need to be way higher.
I think we've both gone on record saying it's the Hall of Very Good.
Yep.
Right, which gives Alfredson a chance.
Yeah, for sure, man. Because
since they're letting anybody in,
yeah, at this point, just waltz right in with your own plaque hanging on the wall. And
okay, can I give you a little something here? And I want you to tell me who, yeah, exactly. It is a little something.
Who was on crack?
I just felt like I had to get that.
I want you to tell me whose stats belong to who. The two players in question, Cam Neely, Eric Lindros.
Okay.
There's only two guys.
Both short careers.
Player A. Played in 726 games, scored 395 goals, 694 points, 1,250 penalty minutes.
1,250 penalty minutes and 700 odd games.
Yep.
Okay.
Player B played in 762 games.
Ooh, fuck.
Scored 372 goals.
Come on, this is...
495 assists for, I don't know, 830 points, had 1,400 penalty minutes.
Can I get the assists again for player A and player B? Can I hear it in
Can
a sentence?
Can I get the country of origin, please? The assist total on which player?
Player A.
Player A had 300 assists.
They're almost identical. I don't know. Player B is Eric Lindros.
Player B is Eric Lindros.
Okay. But honestly, it was a flip of the fucking coin.
Okay. But honestly, if you look at the two, now Lindros had more points.
I expected Lindros, to be honest with you, I expected Lindros would have at least 100 more games than Neely. Because he stuck around, did that Leafs thing, did that Dallas thing, did like he played...
Well, and it just shows you how dominant he was in his early years.
Yes.
And I was surprised to see because Neely, early on, Neely was a scrapper.
Yeah.
Right? But Lindros ended up with 150 more penalty minutes. that to me is, it's amazing. But those are two guys. And if you want to look at both now, Lindros had to wait and wait to be a Hall of Famer.
Yep. Oh, he was a
Neely. Dick. Neely was never... a top five player in the league.
Nope.
Lindros was a game changer.
He was maybe the best player in the league for 2-3 years.
Well, in that same career stretch, right?
Like there was a
mid-90s.
Yeah. There was a point there where, you know, do you want Lindros or Lemieux? Do you want both going to put
Lemieux,
up a tough. Okay. I don't think it's that cut and dry. They're both going to put up a buttload of points, but one will cave your fucking head in against the glass if he has to.
Yep. Well, for sure. One will drive you into the fucking open door and rupture your spleen. One will drive the head of much smaller opponents
God,
in.
My duodenum.
Yeah. Like to me, yeah. There's nobody who loved playing against smaller players more than Eric Lindros. So when you see Scott Steven,
Eric Weinrich,
right? Yeah, when you see or Andreas Dackel, yeah, okay, or Magnus Arvidsson.
Okay, so apparently he caved in a senator or two. Well,
it was Dackel whose head he ran in right into the wham forearm in just for encouragement, and it was Arvidsson who he blasted into an open bench door.
Gave the fucking stunner to on his way by.
So yeah, there's nobody, and that's why, like I said, when you see him, live by the sword, die by the sword,
yeah.
Biatch. Right, you see Stevens just giving him the old.
You just see that gray beard when you mention Stevens, right? That I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Yeah. Hey boy.
You cutting across the blue line here. Yeah. End of career.
Right? Yeah.
Your ghost will wander the league for another decade, but you're done.
In true Highlander fashion, there can only be one.
Yeah.
And here it is.
In every Scott Stevens highlight pack, there's not one that would be legal today, right? When you see all those hits.
Talked about that with Chris Neal, yeah. Right? Wendell Clark, any of those.
Every one of them would be suspension after suspension. Ooh.
Yes. So the Hall of Good.
Yeah.
The Hall of Very Good. No, man, that's all I got.
I've mumbled that a time or two before.
No, I'm giving you all exactly. I got. That was with way more moxie than you've mustered. What's that? What did you say?
Oh my God. We're done here.
Can I just rub it?
It's funny that
the Hall of Very Disappointing.
I'm in there as a builder, in there as a player.
Player? What up, player?
All right, let's wrap this one up.
All right.
That's Talk and Sports.
See ya.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.